Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today.
Yeah, life, sometimes you would probably want a dull moment now and then, but in a cult, there's no downtime. That doesn't happen. You're in this climate of corruption, hidden by the best wholesome imagery a cult can create. You had great-looking families and marriages and social life. You had the central spiritual truth, this absolute, the message of binding everyone together in this common cause. And Michael, as I see it, you know, from all points, from what I've seen and from what everyone I've talked to is, eventually it did end up catching up with you. Mm-hmm. And it ended up to the point where you began finding yourselves on the wrong end of the stick sometimes. I mean, let me just ask you just a quick question in regards to that. When you got married, we understand and we know that Gwen was behind so much of the marriages that were done there. She arranged so many unions. Was that something that happened to you with her, or was this something that you guys genuinely respond to each other? How did that come about? So what was Gwen's part in all of this, Michael, in terms of how certainly one of the most important relationships a person can get involved with was so exploited by her?
Well, she was her part in the arrangement of it all. She was obviously being the top leader of it all, who would be a part of placing anyone together in Remnant. Other leaders would be involved in it, but she would always be at the top. They'd be checking in. And their purpose, obviously, they consistently wanted to keep these, I say in quote, like righteous marriages in a check. And that was their purpose. Like, you know, with Gwen seeing that they would both, the bride and the groom, they'd both be well under her and these top leaders' authority. So, and I want to just make reference. I know this isn't something like an historically new thing. Everyone knows how common this does happen, but it was definitely something which doesn't really happen as much in, you know, our normal United States society, or like in Brentwood, right? So, you know, I guess Gwen would have just been at the top of that.
Right. So these were orchestrated relationships that she felt would best market the movement, as opposed to really being something that was beneficial for those involved, especially you.
Right. And it even went back to, you know, earlier, because I had actually been dating a girl earlier than that, in Remnant, one of my serious girlfriends. Her name was Sarah. I'll just use her first name. But, you know, so like when early on in Remnant, very early, and when I was actually still living with Jonathan Walters, if people know who that is, in a house in West Nashville, because we both were going to Lipscomb University. So we had gone in together and gotten a duplex. And I had been off and on seriously getting together, you know, with her, you know, I guess in Remnant, quote unquote, dating one of these other transplant out of towner girls who had shown up within Remnant. She came from Ohio.
Okay.
And she was, you know, she was a blonde haired, she was funny. I liked that about her, man. She was musically talented too, girl. And so we hit it off, and I'd say we had a lot of fun times, and everything was so adventurous, you know, with all the stuff happening with Remnant. It was just like an adventure every day. It was an upstart church, right, beginning. And so there's all this craziness, which you could kind of almost take it like some form of scary excitement or something. But anyways, she stayed at one of these large girls' houses. Like Remnant, a lot of people, they would live together. And so a lot of the girls, the younger girls, they bought a big house within proximity to Lipscomb University, which is where we were attending. And so lots of these, you know, young Christian Remnant girls in training were staying there. And that actually included Michelle Elizabeth was staying there. And Aaron Moore stayed with them. Jessica Walters, she was Jessica Solomon then, stayed with them. So anyway, one of those, you know, these nightmarish, like weird days, you know, with everyone hating our guts, you know, because we'd all been acting holier than thou at Lipscomb. I went over to their house. It was like this massive 7-bedroom house, which was in Green Hills in Nashville. And Sarah came outside, and she just looked like something was off. And she hugged me, and then she physically, literally fell down on the ground, putting her head on my feet. And she just started bawling her eyes out.
Oh, my God.
And I was seriously not even expecting this. So I almost laughed for a second, but then quickly I realized, I was like, this is not an act. This is not a joke.
You can tell she was in distress.
She was in much distress, and she was almost shaking. She was face down on the asphalt driveway of that house. And she told me, she said, they're going to get rid of me. And I said, what are you talking about? Keep in mind, I'm 21 years old at this point. I said, what are you talking about? Like, this is hard to believe. And I didn't know what to think about. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, Sarah is leaving Remnant. Her mother came from Ohio to pick her up and drive back with her. And I was seriously disturbed by this, as well as I was also, to be honest with you, I was upset that Michelle, I call her Michelle when she's in that period, Elizabeth, who's staying in the same house, would have let this happen to one of these supposedly loyal girls living in that house. But it was Gwen who was really to blame, which goes back to your earlier question for running this girl who I really thought we had something in common. Yeah. Going for us.
Yeah.
And she was a free spirit, which that's probably not a good term for Remnant, but it was
independent thinking doesn't go well in cults. It just doesn't.
You gotta
have a hive mind to fit in.
Yes, that's yes, for sure. And she like a, the free spirit, which is that was closer to what I was.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. But it was a hard thing to watch happen. And then after that, all communication is simply cut off. And so then we have leadership without missing a beat. They're sticking me with this quiet, but she's seemingly perfect girl as well. She's completely loyal, Aaron. Mm-hmm. And she was also sharing a bedroom with Kim Andrews, who's now Kim Vick, is in Remnant, if people know them. So she was sharing a room with Kim, and they were all in that same house. All those girls were in the same house, living together, in early Remnant. And so she was also hailing from Nashville. She had grown up here, and she actually had been at the same high school, David Lipscomb High School. With me and also Brandon Hanna and Nathan Powers and Elizabeth, we all went to that same high school. But she was into different kinds of things than I was. She was in different friend groups, and we literally, this is what's wild. We had literally, I don't think we had ever said one word to each other the whole time in high school. All those years she's in my grade. Mm-hmm. And even within Remnant, yeah. I think maybe we said hi once or something, but I didn't even know the first thing of what to say to her. And so, you know, leadership is, you know, putting us together. And so as we sat, you know, they sat us with each other, and it was suggested, I say in quotes, suggested by Gwen, and as well as, you know, super loyal Elizabeth, and David and Jennifer Martin, of course, were always the ones pushing things that Gwen was saying, that this was God's wife he had chosen for me. And so we had, you know, very little in common. And she had been very close with Amy Stites. I'm not sure if you know who that is, but she's one of the top women generals and Remnant top leaders. And Aaron was very close to Amy Stites, and she had been a major fan of the Way Down Workshop. And she was even at this point starting to call Gwen mama. She would call her mama, and which that was actually something that was extremely hard on her own physical mother, as you can imagine.
Right.
Because that somehow word gets around, and they were sensing, her parents were sensing they were kind of losing her to this cult, which is very, I think you mentioned, it's very similar to the Wingard situation somewhat, right, with Delaney. But, you know, despite the difficulties, we really were trying to make the best of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's not all negative. And of course, I want to say, just for the record, she's, of course, a very pretty woman, girl. Very pretty and very sweet. But I think even despite that physical attraction, you know, might have been something that wasn't just naturally happening. Elizabeth, and these are difficult things to say, but I think they should be said just so people know. Elizabeth had the similar issues with Brandon, mm-hmm. because she was placed with Brandon with some of that, and Gwen having to counsel her with, you know, dressing up Brandon. I would hear them talking about this, you know, Gwen trying to give her advice, you know, dress him up or make his hair a certain way so she would like him more. Mm. Things of that nature. And so I know if it happened to us, it happened to a lot of people.
Oh, sure.
These are very common things. And I know you know that very well, which, you know, happened within Remnant, but this kind of thing has happened forever. This is not something
right
ridiculous.
But yeah, arranged marriages within, you know, close knit communities, you know, that's a common thing. That's as common as it's old as Adam and Eve, you know. You know, mm-hmm. so it's not uncommon. But
right.
in the manner in which you are telling me it took place, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted. This is kind of like news to me. So Sarah was basically, was she expelled from Remnant? Or, I mean, what did she do to even merit that? I mean, did she just go back to Ohio and that was it? And was her family out of good graces? I mean, what happened there?
They wouldn't give me a lot of information, but I did hear that they were making her life so miserable. It was very made plainly that she was a quote unquote struggler. They were making up things about her and they were going to run her off at all times. I think she was told without question, she was not going to be around me to be around anymore.
And what is a struggler in Remnant? I mean, that's a very important term to define for those who are unaware of it. I know everyone who's listening is in Remnant, knows what that is, but who and what is a struggler? And she was characterized as such. So what is that? Who is that?
Well, I don't think she was a struggler, but the,
right.
when I they mean, call one, yeah. someone a struggler in Remnant would be someone, if weight is the number one sin of Remnant, strugglers typically would be people that are having trouble losing weight, overweight. They'd be in something called the strugglers class. It could be labeled for other things, but I would, you know, 95% of the time it has to do with weight. But that's just a very common term they would throw around, somebody struggling with the message, which is complete obedience to God, which is complete obedience to Gwen. Somebody struggling, it's just one of their lingo, who's not all in, you know, somebody that's not all the way. And they labeled her as that, and they made up some things about her with her own life.
Yeah,
not to go into detail, but
right,
they made it clear that, like, you've not gone all the way. We don't see you as somebody capable of being loyal, like, you know, leadership or whatever. That they're not seeing her in that position, so they run her off.
Right.
Was if she that makes weight? Some I mean, sense. I mean, Gwen could tell that she would have had her own mind,
yeah,
which was a problem. So they have to plaster her with struggler is a bad term in Remnant. You don't want to be called struggler. It's an embarrassing term.
Right.
And Sarah was not overweight. They were labeling people like that. That if you're labeled something like that, it's can be a shameful thing. Or
yeah.
They can try to run you off any way they can.
Right.
Because they leadership, viewed her they were as a saying,
spiritual, you know, social liability, right?
Right. You know, and leadership is saying, you know, if God is placing people together, you know, back to the marriage, it's through the line of authority, you know, it's all going to work out.
Right.
If it works out, if it's all through the line of authority, she didn't fall in underneath that.
Yeah.
So they have to come up with lies about her. And that was what was really unfortunate. She didn't deserve that.
Yeah.
But anyway, me and Aaron, you know, we made the effort, and that ended up with us having four awesome children who I desperately hope one day get to see what things are actually like with regards to hearing another point of view and not just, you know, the remnants. But that was, that's what happened.
Yeah. So that's what happened, as you embraced her because you were told that's the best thing for you and for her. Right. It was entered into relationship with her because that was to be God's will, and you did your best. But that's where it was.
It was, and I think sometimes maybe you or maybe some people might have questions of why did I let myself go along with that, or why was I, able, how is somebody able to talk a 21-year-old guy, into something like that possibly? But I would just say, but in remnant, for people to know the circumstances of all this happening, I would say I went along with the whole thing partly because of how I had this awe of Gwen still. I had never watched someone like Gwen stand up against something like the whole male-dominated religious system like that. So I was still in a phase of having great admiration for Gwen. Mm-hmm. Right. This was difficult on me, but that's where I was in my own mind. Like, it was an admiration for some group going up against a system. And, somebody going up against incredible odds, like the rebellion in Star Wars or something. That kind of form of admiring, somebody who's unafraid to take a stance on something. Right. So, I never was completely won over by Gwen. Not completely. And I was very disappointed seeing her, turn into a massive control freak. But that people have to understand that time period in Remnant, which is, this is 2001 time period. Mm-hmm. Besides all these things, I was, 21, turning 22 when I got married when I was 22. Me and Aaron were both 22 when we got married. Pretty young. When this whole arrangement is being pushed on us, and the circumstances are not normal. They were actually pretty extreme. I did want to say, I was the third Remnant wedding. Okay. So if people recall, if anyone's ever been in Remnant, they would know Remnant numbers the weddings. And I think they're now up to like something like 400 and something, and the number's still rising in. But so there were those of us like in inner circles in Remnant. And we had been in something like a heated debate over what was even going to happen with all of us, with all of the craziness going on, like with our lives, like the persecution. And I say persecution, like we felt we were being persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And in our youth group, all those girls in those houses, the young people in Remnant, we were being, had our own form of persecution going on in the quote-unquote youth group. We were I'll give you an example. We at Lipscomb University, right? Most of us were at Lipscomb University, and people were writing Gweezus on the sidewalks of the college. And they were ripping down our youth group posters. That if we ever put something on the wall, they would rip it down. They were bad mouthing us everywhere we went. We walked to the student center. We're having to hold our heads. You're always being talked about. This is besides the church wide persecutions going on around at the time. There's people picketing outside the church. I don't know if you recall that instance when people were outside of the warehouse on Seaboard Lane with picketing. And I believe the media came to that. You've got some super angry families, that have their kids or whatever inside remnants. And, you know, then years later, we have the Channel 5 situation with the Super Bowl commercial, you know, the flame, firm beliefs. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and there was a situation that, you know, this is the kind of environment it was. Like, I was actually involved in saving, you know, Gwen from a guy that was just, he was mad as heck, you know, in when we were in Washington, D.C. on a Rebuilding the Wall tour. The guy tried to rush the stage to get Gwen, and I kind of blocked him, you know, like I was doing a football move, and then security takes him out to the convention center hallway to get rid of him. But so we're in a constant state of awareness, right? We're constantly watching out. That's how all of this is going on. And Gwen had been threatened with a sniper's bullet. Like, someone said they were going to drive by on Seaboard Lane when we were meeting in the Waydown office at night and shoot her with a sniper rifle. So from that point on, we were always pulling the curtains if it was dark outside.
Right.
So nobody could see in. And, you know, and here's where my mind was going to. This is the state I was in. Like, I think it started messing me over when I heard, you know, how people were actually starting to mention bringing physical punishment back, or torturous death back, in 2001. So keep in mind, this is right after 9/11, and you've got Guantanamo Bay situation going on. And now it's fair to say the U.S. was now seriously allowing torture on enemy combatants. And those things kind of came to light later on. But so this stuff, it's not taken lightly by my mind, you know, and there's rumors I heard about, you know, there's some very angry men and angry women. They were talking about wanting to, like, physically burn Gwen at the stake. Like, not an idea, not an idea. They're not just saying it. It's not hurting her reputation. It's actually physically bringing that form of death back to Christianity, like for a heretic. And these were people, I think it was actually some women. I'd actually heard it was some women at Christianity Today saying things like that. It wasn't just anybody. It was some high-level people saying some crazy things like that. Yeah. So I was on constant guard, and you have to understand, me and Michelle, Elizabeth, we had been inside this Waydown RF bubble for years, right? Already. I already had been in this bubble for years when Remnant started. So I couldn't really know if some of these crazy things weren't legitimately going to happen. For all I knew, they were going, for really, I kid you not, in my mind, I thought they were going to start bringing back burning people sick.
Sure, right.
So well, it was a perfect storm of everything going on. And Gwen's having meanwhile, Gwen's doing sermons. We're in the back of the warehouse talking on Fox's Book of Martyrs, which is really graphic if anyone's ever read it. And it's not, you don't take it lightly when you actually think it might happen to yourself. So I was in a phase of researching, you know, all these martyr situations. I was trying to look for, did people actually make it out alive? Like, it was messed up like that. I was looking to see, did anybody live? And I remember, I remember distinctly on one of the Rebuilding the Wall tours in a hotel room, I asked Gwen, I was like, do you think I'm going to live to see 25? Like, do you think I'll ever be able to marry? Because I was not married yet, and I asked her that. I was, like, hoping to marry in my life. And I was like, do you think I'll ever be able to marry? So that's where my mind was. So I go along with these things. You know, I've got this admiration for Gwen. That's the environment me and Aaron were getting married in. And I'll tell you another thing about our wedding. We even had – we had one crazy woman from – I think you had already brought up Otter Creek Church. That's where Aaron's family and friends were coming from. And our wedding was kind of unique in the way that it was possibly the last time Remnant had a lot of people from an outside Christian church come to the wedding. Like, our wedding had, it was about half and half. After that, it started being, like, way dominant Remnant with very few visitors. Right. But our wedding was not like that.
Right.
And it was, there was a woman, she started telling people as they were sitting there, she was going to start pulling the plugs and the cords out of the sound system while our wedding was going on. So you've got like a form of distraction or attack or something, because they were upset. And sure enough, she got up and started pulling the audio cords out until somebody stopped her, which caused a delay. So anyway, that's the anxiety environment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the one that you and Aaron did your best. Obviously you did your best to make the most of it and to truly live out what you believe was the right way to live. I mean, that's like, if you live in a bubble and somebody's entirely dominating your environment within that, you're going to obviously, gravitate to whatever it is they say. Again,
right.
Why not wanting to be too preachy at this point, but in cults and in movements that are abroad, the question of cultic mind control comes up. And again, this is, excuse me, another element of that. There's one element of the marks of mind control as taught by Dr. Robert Lifton. One thing he describes is that you see in a cultic environment is when you see what's called milieu control. It's when the entire environment, the culture, the social interactions, the activities, the values, everything you pull together to bring people together, mm-hmm. and bind together, is completely dominated and controlled by an elite few who know what they're doing. And that's exactly what you guys were doing. Everything you and Aaron and Elizabeth, Michelle and Brandon, it's what you all experienced. This is the world that Gwen was leading you into.
Mm.
And you guys were going to be the vanguards, as the first marriage is there, that you're going to be the vanguards of the new society, the new order. Mm-hmm. You guys were true Zion.
Supposedly. Yes. We're going along with it, with the respect for Gwen,
Right. Right. So at this point, within that milieu control, with Gwen signing off on everything that should be done and must be done to establish not only the leadership, but the overall direction and future of Remnant, she's orchestrating marriages, which continues to be an institution within Remnant to this day. And it was about this time, as the outflow of the wedding celebrations, that things began to really coalesce. The social environment, the social connections that began to be created at that point began to become more and more festive. I mean, mm-hmm. it's one thing to celebrate at a good wedding. People start celebrating in a very, very free manner. We're celebrating, a couple coming together and developing new life. But, everything that goes with that gets inserted. And at this point, I think that's where the party element, so to speak, began to introduce itself into Remnants. I think before you mentioned, Michael, you guys were having the meetings at Seaboard Lane. You had the church meetings there. And I'm sure you had get-togethers afterwards, kind of maybe snacks or something like that, or some quiet time after the webcast ended. But now, with these new marriages, that's when the celebration and the party began to really, really become a major issue and a major draw, a Remnant.
Yes, and that's an amazing point. I had never really thought about through that, how that would produce that kind of party-like atmosphere, but that's exactly, I think you're exactly right. It's like these letting loose party type Remnant situations, and the result of the ultra high anxiety situations and environments, because fear is pretty much a daily thing all of us were living with at right. the time. And people living in Remnant now, well, that may actually, they may be living with fear right now, but
for
a lot of the years in Remnant, they weren't living with the daily fear that we had in early Remnant. Serious daily fear. And we've already hit on this too, I think earlier, but Gwen had this very hidden from the members, like ultra wanting to be a let loose party girl. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that already. She had that inside her. You know, she was very controlling, but inside, if people will know, you know, all the numerous dance parties, you know, this is starting off the Remnant dance parties, celebrations, and situations like that. Anybody that has even been remotely a part of Remnant in any sort of serious way would remember, you know, seeing Gwen almost being like the life of the party on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. You know, that was always her. She was always trying to lead it on. And she had zero issues with drinking at these after party celebrations, you know, we were starting to have that you're talking about, you know, that did it. It started the whole thing off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, David Shamblin had a part in some of the men, like, the, you know, he's smoking the cigar because the men, you know, were people living with tension and letting loose. I think a lot of the women would love to hear Gwen say things like, you know, David Shamblin was the inspiration for a lot of the men letting loose and drinking or something, or partying, you know, with his, you know, there were some card playing sessions that he set up at the guest house. But I think Gwen had massively more claim for why these people were acting this way.
Right. Well, it's because of what she liked to do. She wanted to do that. She who was going to tell her what to do differently?
Right.
You know, and let me hasten to add, you know, there's nothing wrong with socializing. There's nothing wrong with coming together and you know, relaxing and doing that. Now, what becomes questionable is when this becomes an ongoing coping mechanism within a church. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, as a Christian church, you would think faith and sobriety and certainly the element of worship and praise are what are the chief elements of a traditionally Christian life. It's something where you're looking forward to endurance,
mm-hmm.
the help of divine means, such as walking in the Spirit so you don't fulfill the lust of the flesh, trusting in God so you're not fearful all the time. But Gwen had something better, though, it seems, and at this point within the marriages and within the subsequent culture thereafter, she began becoming, as you said, the real party animal. I think some of the first pictures I ever got from people were her having those dance offs in Ashlawn, and the big things you had over there at the marriages.
I remember David Martin dancing on top of the piano at Ashland. I think he was doing YMCA too. I know that may be not the right time and place to share this, but no, I mean, it Remnant, what it was literally like, you know, you look at like how strict in control the eating part of it was.
Right. Exactly.
You know, the other sins that people are, it's like bottling up. And then all of a sudden it's like an explosion. Right. Because there's this outlet created for Remnant. And this outlet is like all of a sudden all these people are dying to just let loose. And all of a sudden, oh, it's going to be the after parties. Oh, it's going to be the Gwen's holding a wine and dancing. Okay, this is all of a sudden you can see this flood of people moving that way. And it affected me as well. I mean, I looked at it like everyone else was around. Like, hey, if Gwen is having a great blast of a time, then far be it from me to not partake, right? That's kind of where enter me. I was in such a constant, you know, anxiety, watching out mindset that it's a form of relief. And that should not be, that's not surprising. none of this should be super surprising. I do think it's a great point that, you know, how you brought this up, but, you know, we all, especially the younger ones of us, like, we had had quite enough of people saying horrible things about us, right? Or saying things about my mother, or, you know, in the youth group, or falsely accusing us of wild things. Like, people were saying Remnant was having weird sacrifices, you know, in the, mm-hmm. in the back of the church right. property, or things like that. And so we were in a phase of Zion celebration.
Right. Right. And that became a foundational part of the social glue that kept Remnant together, kept everybody looking mm-hmm. to, you know, moving from one day to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Milieu control. So we're talking about the environment is completely steered and orchestrated. And mm-hmm. and of course, here you are, a young man trying to love a good woman. And unfortunately, that all finally got caught up with you as well.
Yeah, that's right. And I had mentioned before, I was seeing the sins already started at that point, you know, as people was working with and watching people that appeared like angels on the outside. But once again, as appearances, we've already talked about that, but the people able to waltz into the church like the most perfectly pure person that's ever lived. And, you know, I was trying to catch these people. I was, it was a lame attempt to try to get people reported in. I was feeling the frustration. And my own faith was, you know, it was seeping through the ground at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I was, as I started seeing things, you know, in the few years after that, I was very, very scared that everything that I had given up, like my Christian music deal, I had given up my college experience. I didn't get to have a college experience, like, you know, an American college experience. I gave up my own reputation.
Yeah.
I was scared that it was all in vain.
Right.
And I'm not the first person to feel that way.
Right.
And I was, you know, after so many wild experiences, you know, it was a young cult. And I was just in somewhat shock or disbelief that all of this stuff was happening.
Right.
And you know, these cracks in the wall, you know, this was supposed to be the new Jerusalem, right? This new party church. And we're, you know, it's growing, but, you know, and everybody, you know, the scripture, right, when the Israelites come back to Jerusalem to rebuild after the exile of Babylon,
right,
you know, there's people holding a sword, and, you know, I think it's Ezra and Nehemiah, I think, talks about that, mm-hmm. and you've got people holding a sword, you know, the Israelites were holding a sword in one hand, and they were laying a brick with the other hand.
Right.
I think that's how it describes it.
Right.
And that was Remnant. You know, our eyes were looking everywhere for the enemies. But guess what? No one was looking inward.
Good point. To your point, Michael, that is incredibly accurate way of looking at it. People, because as you said, that we're so focused on the external. We wanted to look at, or not we, you, Remnant wanted to look. Let me go back up. Human beings, being who we are, we focus on the external, and I'm just as guilty as anyone else. I can put more credence into someone that looks the part that really isn't, and that's what was going on in Remnant.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. And in the middle of all that, like I said, you and Aaron, is it fair to say you guys just did your best, but you began to basically grow apart? Did the party element contribute to that in any way?
Well, I would say it didn't help. No, that's a good way to put it. It did not help. You know, the there was nothing normal about what was going on. You know, people trying to be pure, but no, it didn't help me at all. It didn't help our relationship at all. But that over time, I think what really would have caused bigger issues would have been me seeing the loyalty factor, where the loyalty, when I mentioned, you know, she's calling Gwen mama, her loyalty, and I'm not saying this in a way to cut her or slight her, but her loyalty would have been to Gwen and not me.
Right.
And I know a lot of these remnant marriages, they talk about the wife is, you know, submissive to the husband. She's trying to build her husband up. I was just in a different situation, and I was doing was being talked about with Gwen and Elizabeth. So things like that didn't help, besides right. the environment that we were in.
Right. Well, in any movement like Remnant, even though it is said that the two should become one in any relationship, Christian relationship, Christian marriage, that's supposed to be the goal. I've known as a minister for many years, I've known that quite often, that rarely, that's a rare thing. When two become one to the point where they actually, you know, develop a relationship apart from everything else, they develop between themselves. You know, something was said well a long time ago that when you marry someone, that person you marry should be in a circle. You have a tight-knit circle, and that for order for it to work out, in order for you to work out what you have to, you don't let anyone in that circle. You keep the voices out. You keep the direction out. You two figure it out together. And in a place right. like that don't work. That's not the way it works. That's never the way it works.
And especially since it's also in arranged marriage, right? It's right. not like we met over common ground. Right. It's not like we met and found each other and like, hey, let's go on this Christian walk together. That's mm-hmm. not how we met.
Right. It was all forced. Wow. Yeah.
But I wish her, you know, I wish her well, and she's, you know, she's been a good mother. I love my children. I do, of course, wish her well with everything. Yeah. She's still in the remnant, but, you know, that's about all I would want to say about that.
And you yourself began to drift. I mean, you couldn't help yes. it. You're just part of it. It got to the point where restraint and even the fidelity of your vows became a casualty of bad choice that was influenced by the whole situation.
That's right. And you know, here's the thing. Nobody wants to talk about the, you know, the 19 years that I was not, you know, having a problem, but it did, right. you know, the problem, it did start happening. But, you know, I did tell you, like when I mentioned the cracks in the walls of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. I was seeing people that I had situations where I had people kind of working with, people like looking over me, mm-hmm. that I felt like they were, if anybody could be pure, they could be. And then I see them get away with running off with somebody.
Yeah.
And then coming back. And I tried mentioning things to Gwen. I tried trying to catch them. I would even try to drive off and try to film just so I could prove, you know, I was kind of freaking out because I'm going, you've got to be kidding me here. Like this is happening. I'm seeing thing after thing. We've already had 100 psychopathic people come in weird situations. And
yeah,
no, there was thing after thing after thing of wild, bizarre people that came into the church. There's a guy that came in that loved to dress in an SS uniform. And I mean, there was nothing normal about Remnant. There was no, we were trying to, you know, people were trying to be quote unquote pure, but it could be a madhouse. And
yeah, you're right.
I saw people getting away with things. And meanwhile, I'm sitting over here trying to write these songs. Almost all my songs had some sort of battle theme to them in the first few years.
Right.
And I'm at the same time, I'm seeing people getting away with things. And so and then I see Gwen grow as the Sanctuary's established in 2004, I see her start getting more controlling. I see her get a little more. It was Remnant started being established more.
Yeah.
And that kind of solidified her position, her feeling of herself.
Right.
Her.
The authority line was hardening. The constant, the connections, the authority hierarchy. You know, right. even when a place like Remnant, you know, there was a social hierarchy as much as it were the leadership hierarchy, and there were people who clearly were going to be involved at certain points. There are people right. who are at the bottom who were at the bottom of the pecking order, and then there are people at the top.
That's right. And yeah, groups had already kind of formed. You can call them cliques or groups or segments, however you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But those groups had already kind of formed. Like you're saying, they were hardening, and you've got the building now established. Gwen has got her team of women, and she's got her team of men who are kind of, she's set up now as leaders, the Remnant Knights of the Round Table, and she's the, you know, whatever, the queen. And they have their building. She's got the building designed. She felt like that was a big victory. That was a big victory for Gwen. I don't think people realize how much that meant to her to get that building built in Brentwood. Mm-hmm. I think that did a lot to bolster her confidence.
Right.
And oh, sure. She, you know, she had quote unquote designed it, even though it's literally she's looking at a blueprint of the old North Church or whatever. She was copying other things, but she designed it, and then that being established kind of gave her the she got her stage set up permanently. Now it's no longer a warehouse, because I think there was still a level of humility that kind of came to Gwen, because she still had to go get on stage in a warehouse, you know, like it was a shipping department. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as much as she was being lifted up as a leader, it's still kind of humbling in a way to mm-hmm. be in that kind of setting.
Right.
And the stage was low. The stage was only about a foot or two high. She was not. Then you have Remnant, and she's on this big stage in a big sanctuary, and he's got people filling it. And the lights and the cameras, I think that really gave her, though. And it's a building that she designed, and look at all these people. Remnant has started, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, she said she created her own stage. I mean, that is a venerable kind of awe that comes over people when they look at how far a woman preacher in the Bible Belt creates this whole new spiritual movement on her mm-hmm. own, where she answers to nobody.
Right.
Nominally the elders, but yeah, it's that's, you know, from a secular point of view, from a religious point of view as well, you know, that yeah, there's a certain rush to that.
It had to be. And now David Shamlin's out of the picture, because
mm-hmm.
he's gone by the time the first year or two in the warehouse, he's gone. Right. So now she's in this whole building, and she is the absolute authority.
Right.
She gets to taste that. And Remnant, you know, they were there, as much as I would say, you know, other churches could be off the path of whatever you want to call true religion or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. But Remnant, you know, those other churches, they weren't seeking the glory of being the first place to visit on the face of the earth, right? You have right. Remnant, you know, claiming to be, they're the first people to know the real truth. Mm-hmm. And which has happened over and over and over again.
Right.
But countless Christian groups have come before them and lost their supposedly righteous direction. But, you know, this was the new dawning of Gwen.
Right. The New Jerusalem, you know, yes. the remnant vision, you know, it's all there. It's this is recaptured truth restored.
And I want to bring a point to the building, too, as it was established. I always, this hit me, and I never heard anyone else say anything about it, but I took photos of it. I always noticed she painted the columns on the walls. They weren't real columns.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk into the Remnant Sanctuary, there are white painted columns on the walls everywhere. Okay.
All right.
that's to me, it was white painted columns.
Yeah,
they weren't real.
Right, they're in there is like some sort of decor.
It was a picture of a column.
Right, right.
Of a church.
And it's supposed to be again imitating the original design, right?
I think she just wanted to put white columns in.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it was painted,
yes, but it was painted.
Yeah.
And the gold that was put in there, anything painted gold, it was painted gold. It wasn't real gold. It was painted on. And it was white paint.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always felt that was so significant to me that that's how I felt about so much of it. It was a picture of a church, like what I mentioned before. It was
right, the portraiture.
It's a picture of a church, and it looks good from Franklin Road. Yeah. But it's already got all these problems. But it looked really pretty. You know, it looked very desirable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But even though, like I said, we've already discussed, I've already detailed this, there was a lot going on that you wouldn't find in other churches up the street. I mean, you might, but not to that degree. They would have hidden it as much as they had, you know. I mean, I realize as a minister, I've been in the ministry for, you know, since 1980, okay, 81. And I understand hypocrisy. I understand the sins of the church, what's going on. There's always all kinds of things going on to where people don't even look at it as a relevant institution anymore, which is totally understandable. But in a place like Remnant, this stuff was hidden so well and just completely explained away and rationalized away so quickly for members. You guys sat and saw, you're at the height of it all. You're seeing things go on that you just know wouldn't fly anyplace else, but here Remnant, it's totally up for grabs, and you're of course a part of that. Now as that's what leading back to, you know, what we were talking about at that point, you know, as this we're talking about the 2008 years coming on, that's when we began hearing of and knew of a certain amount of dissent that was rising from leaders that decided that they couldn't take anymore. And apparently there was a meeting of Gwen with some leaders of the church. I won't name them just because I know they're trying to live their own lives. I'll get it. And I get that. But they did try. They are now ex-members who did try to provide some measure of accountability and demand it from leadership. And of course, your example in your own affair, you did the things you did, and others came up, and it became a really big hissy fit. And it got to the point where Gwen did what she normally does, and that's rally the whole Remnant Nation behind her in a mass meeting to where she's going to explain away everything that had gone down. And this is a meeting that I understand you weren't a part of, but part of what you had indulged yourself in certainly precipitated some of that.
Right. I was clearly not invited to that huge Remnant leadership meeting, which concerned me. But so I'll need, you know, to hear from you and from others about that, I feel like. But I wouldn't be surprised if in that situation someone else had basically forced Gwen to have to hold this secretive inside the church meeting. That doesn't surprise me.
Right. Well, the meeting became an issue. The way it was described, I wish I could play the tape. I actually got the recording of it. And in the midst of this extraordinary recording, the whole discussion was framed as an act of rebellion by these individual Remnant Fellowship leaders who are demanding of Gwen to crack down on things that they felt that needed to be cracked down on, and that the way they're doing was disrespectful. It was you know, just very presumptuous. Of course, they didn't discuss in any substantial degree what was going on. Other than that, there were just wild accusations, in essence, there actually were some very direct things, which, like you said, involved you. And you were not alone, though. You were not the only person that was being fingered. Of course, you're the most prominent. There are many of the things you've reported on where there was immorality. There were other extramarital affairs and things in which people were being mistreated. Those came up. Other people came up. So this was being brought to their attention, and in the midst of a discussion, it became very apparent to Gwen she wasn't going to rope these people back in. You had mentioned you were aware that part of it involved you, your infidelity, and the affair, yes, which came out in the HBO documentary. And again, I take no pleasure bringing it, but it's just a factual thing. It's what happened.
Well, I think there's a lot. There was a lot going on in 2008, 2009.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And part of that stemmed, part of that is what initiated, that precipitated the crisis meeting. That's what it was about.
Certainly. And I'm sure that I was a part of this because there were, for multiple reasons. And I know there's a lot of these stories that I don't think anybody's ever heard before.
Right.
But... so you've got this period of time. So after I'd been seeing a lot of things for years, then, I'm majorly tired of receiving abuse at the hands of Gwen at this point. And they were running me through the cleaners. And I was attempting to get out with any method I could at this point. There was a point that I got to. And, the purpose of most everything I was doing at that point was escape, right? I think it's ironic that one of the songs on my very first album in 1999 was called Escape. But now I'm actually, it was Escape, whatever form that could look like. But to go back, I could tell you what started kind of that issue was in 2008. So I was, sick of Gwen at this point. Like I mentioned, her control had grown. Her ego had grown, was already at a height. And I was tired of her telling me what I could or could not do, who I could work with, who I couldn't work with, as well as obviously, seeing her intense desire to outshow me with whatever I was doing. So this is all just concerning from my point of view, what had happened. I had produced the musical Hosanna Symphony in 2006, and that had all come out. And so in 2008, she gets her Treasure Series. I don't know how familiar you are with it. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm, I am.
And I just felt like that entire concept was her wanting to make people realize she could also produce some smashing big production or film or something. It's after Hosanna Symphony, and it's also after, I don't know if you recall the movie, it was a big Disney movie, The Pirates of the Caribbean had just come out.
Okay, right.
And Johnny Depp, right, and he's dressed in, as Captain Jack Sparrow, right, with the boots and the jacket, and he's kind of walks around, he's funny, the pirate. And so that's, keep in mind, that had just happened, so Gwen is just blown away by that movie. She's really, with Treasure Series, she really was hoping to make this like a long running, like a movie series or something. She would talk about that.
All right.
Which was just hugely embarrassing for me to see what her reasonings were, like in the background. Uh-huh. So I'm sitting there, this is 2008, and I'm dutifully putting out more evil music for this disturbing church, and you could probably see it on my face, the frustration at this point, because I think I looked as angry as I ever looked on that Treasure CD cover. I was upset, and I wasn't being allowed to work with anyone. So by the end of 2008, 2009, this is something I can mention in a minute, but it's like I started wanting to put up a website, some big dark blog, And I don't think a lot of people in Remnant nowadays would know about this, but I put up a blog where, you know, I could write these Christian questioning thoughts publicly.
Uh-huh.
And I worked with a guy named Steve Lomas, who's still a Remnant member. And he's also who I actually played his, you know, his kind of silly, humorous testimony with the post-it notes at the end of my first Michael S. Black podcast. I only put it on there. It was kind of just a weird way just to remind him kind of how he used to be more of a stand-up guy. I think that's why I did it. Because I don't typically single out members. I don't have a policy where I don't like to do that unless it's something grievous. It's typically leaders who I go after. But I think some of the more disturbing things on this website, which has fallen, I got the domain name fallenchurch.com off GoDaddy. And, you know, I think something that really disturbed Gwen, and keep in mind this is still 2008, 2009, right, for Treasure Series, and I had Steve make this picture. I wanted it to be a steeple in a hayfield. And so it looked like the church had, like, been destroyed or blown up. And the only thing sticking out of this kind of remnant-looking field is the white steeple. So that was the picture you see on the front of this blog. And so that was the beginning of that. But so, you know, going back to, like, how I was feeling, that was going on. And I was just at the point where it's like, you know, I'm sick with seeing sins. And I feel like you can only wear this Christian remnant mask for so long before it, like, fuses to your face, you know? And that's what I was determined never to come close to happening. I was determined not to turn into these people doing the windshield wiper dance every day, you know, the windshield wiper hand movements and seeing this cult. I was just determined not to turn into that. And these lessons that I was learning, to me, the real lessons that I was picking up, the real things I was picking up, they weren't being taught from that sick remnant stage. And they weren't taught to us in the warehouse, and they're not written in scriptures, but these were lessons, like, it was strictly from a Christian avoidance, or it was survival point of view at this point for me. And so, you know, I realized that, like, this person who she was claiming to be the Most High, you know, without a single thing she said was ever wrong, ever. And Dave and Jennifer Martin would tell people, nothing she said is ever wrong. They said, do you realize who you're talking to? This is like Moses. You're talking to Moses. They would tell people that. And this was something, it was like, it was a disappointing, I mean, I'll say Christian witch right now, but we don't have to get into that. But Gwen, I swear she could sense if someone was even having internal doubts about her.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. You know, just she had all the answers, and she's trying, as well as now she's trying to impress all of these people in this cult, joining, like, it's some, you know, form of, like, she's like the monarch witch queen or something.
Right.
She can use the scriptures, and she's reshaping people, and she's trying to reshape me, her son, into something resembling a Christian. And I say that very loosely, as what remnant Christianity would be.
Yeah.
Her version of it.
Right.
But it was hollow. It was very hollow. It was the white painted columns. There was nothing to it. It was hollow. And so I was suffocating. This had been years of her control, the years of the weight. Keep in mind, I'd already had to put up with it and weigh down. It's years and years. Before Remnant even started, I'd already had years of this.
And
it resulted in turning any of the remaining admiration that I had had for her, you know, like I mentioned before, like seeing someone stand up against a system, you know, the male-run Christian churches, into now, I'm simply just repulsed by her at this point. Seeing her put on those pirate boots and do her hair and walk around like she's Jack Sparrow on the video screen and making Joe Filmer, like, in front of a boat, I knew what she was doing. And she, in trying to impress, and the more this happened, the more I was disgusted. And, you know, at this point, you know, every prayer meeting that we have, every event is starting to feel like a surveillance session. And, you know, she's keeping on the path of seeing everyone fall under her narcissistic control. So by this point, I wasn't just jaded. I was like disillusioned with the whole women's movement by this point. Right. And so it came a time after all of that was going on that I knew I wanted out of this prison. You know, right. I was like a caged animal at this point. You know, I already knew by this point that being holy within Remnant, it meant staying within Gwen's good graces.
Right.
That's what holy meant. And it had zero appeal to me by this point. I had zero desire for her approval. And so, you know, in contrast, you know, I think to this day, there's still people like acting like they still want like encouraging words from Gwen. Like even after her death.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard weird stories of women saying they still hear Gwen's voice in their head, or, you know, they still long to hear Gwen say good job or something. They still feel that way, which is horrible to me. But right. And so I go into full quote unquote rebellion mode at that time because nothing else was working. And so you've got multiple things happening in this period. You know, I'm hoping for some sort of Christian music opportunity, maybe outside the walls of Remnant. That was one thing. And, you know, I also started experimenting with trying to get another job, which could mean freedom, getting funds from some other place. But that eventually goes nowhere because I bombed out of 3 or 4 interviews. And I think it's because I was, you know, just looked like a crazy person. I had blue hair and, you know, I probably looked like somebody intent on doing something crazy or something, smelling like cigar smoke or something. I had one guy that was in Nashville that was in the music industry. He was letting me go to his place and start working. This is like 2009, and he had a Christian music company. But at the last second, he gets spooked by everything. He's spooked by Remnant. And then I also was kind of toying with the idea of leaving with another woman. Like going and living with another woman. And, you know, that got close to happening with one of the affairs. And it was somebody pretty popular in Franklin. But she was close family with a guy that's in a big, huge Christian band.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very rebellious type girl, and we hit it off immediately. We met at a cigar bar, and I think that was the closest I ever got to being like okay with leaving everything. But the whole point to me, it was escape, right? So I had had enough at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got the website. And so, you know, you remember Gina, you know, Gina Graves Mitchell, yes, talking about in HBO, you know, this is the stage Michael came in and he just looked terrible. That was true, right? I did look pretty horrible coming in if I was showing up at Remnant things. And I wasn't necessarily, it was what she mentioned that I was trying to get a music deal. It was partially true. To me, the real Christian music recording deal opportunity that I had was already over when Gwen's Trinity Statement came out. I think that ship had passed, but this was a point I was trying to like just do something within the Christian music industry at this point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've got, you know, a situation where I had a first encounter. My dad, David Shamblin, he had gotten to see Hosanna Symphony. And so he started showing that CD to some other people. Some other guys at Stogie's, the cigar bar. And so at one point he texted me, he's all excited. And he's like, hey, you've got to come over here. This is still like late 2008, early 2009. And the website had just started to fall in church. And he said, you know, you've got to come meet this guy. And And that was his element. He loved to just be the conversation guy over at Stogie's. But he was trying to take me one step closer, you know, to get me out of that way down studio. You know, trying to get me a real opportunity. He understood. He could see through that. He knew what Glenn was doing.
He knew where you were and knew what you wanted.
He did. And he knew, like to perform for just more than just Gwen and her loyal remnant church leaders and, you know, anything. So he had been showing this guy, and I'm not going to give his full name because he still lives in Nashville. He was a music executive, but his name was Will. We'll say Will, and that was his first name. But so we hit it off. We go over there and meet with David Shamblin, and then we decide to start meeting on our own separately. And so, you know, with the idea to break away from Remnant in any way possible. So he's a real smart guy. He was a cigar aficionado, and he had a lot of connections. But nothing we did, here's the problem. In all my trying, my attempts to escape Remnant, nothing I did made a dent like in these chains that Gwen had over my whole life. So like my financial situation, it was desperately tied into absolutely everything RF at this point. Mm-hmm. Right. As well as I've mentioned, you know, I think I may have talked to you about Ted. I was unable to complete some form of college degree. You know, I dropped out of Lipscomb because of Remnant, because of the persecution there. And when I try to go back, Ted is stopping me. Gwen sends Ted to stop me. And I think I already mentioned that to you, saying that I'm anointed. You can't do this. And they wouldn't let me do it. So my whole existence, like, it somehow revolved around Remnant in every form and fashion. I stupidly allowed that to happen. But, you know, I owed money to Gwen and David for my house, which was by design. They had me paying. So I didn't own my house. I owed money. I was slowly paying things off. And everybody I knew in my life were in the Remnant Church. And even my now ex-wife, she was determined to be ultra loyal, no matter what, to whatever Gwen and her legal team would have wanted to do to me. Mm-hmm. And I think we're well aware of what they do to people. And, you know, Gwen, I'm not kidding. She would have loved for me to just be staying under a bridge or sleeping in my car. And that was kind of turning into about the only option. And even that, which I was really close to that, it was seeming like a short-term escape.
Yeah.
Because of the phenomenon Remnant does of causing, you know, a lack of sympathy, or, you know, they can sabotage you. You know, so they have a way of calling up businesses and bad-mouthing employees who work against them or leave.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've seen firsthand many times. I even saw it this last, you know, 5 months ago, a woman, I don't want to give her a name, but she desperately, she's like, please help me, Michael. Everywhere I go work, they're getting me fired everywhere I go. She's like, I'm going to have to move to another state. So that they do that. And so I'm aware of that. But anyway, so I'm talking to this guy, Will, and he's helped me talk to Christian music, you know, employers as a prospective employee. We start losing hope. Every time, you know, we had a plan, it would be shot down. You know, I was working with B.B. Barkus by that point, who had joined Remnant around Hosanna Symphony time. He was helping me with Hosanna Symphony. So now we were working, and B.B. Barkus, I guess if people don't know who he is, he was he come from Los Angeles, and he had actually left a very prominent music career playing lead electric guitar for Shania Twain and Kenny Loggins. And he played in DC Talk. And Stephen Curtis Chapman, who's a very big Christian award-winning guy. So BB was helping me as far as studio-wise. I worked with him on music. And by the way, BB is now back with Shania. He's still in Remnant, but he's back with Shania. So good for him on that. But, you know, so we were trying to do anything, even though these songs were very Remnant-centric. they weren't close to radio worthy, maybe, but eventually no one's really interested in it. And I think a lot of people were spooked by Gwen. But so anyway, we're sitting there and we go to this kind of dark gulch area. Nashville's got a place called the Gulch Lounge, and we'd go at the evenings, and we're sitting there just talking about how Gwen had decided by this point that we were trying to make a plan for an escape. She had figured it out. And she wasn't very pleased, you know, at me trying to leave, you know, within the confines of what she would accept, you know, that would only mean she's still at the helm of everything. That's the only way somebody could do anything is if she is at the helm. And this is the point where I started to take off a little bit and stay in hotels sometimes, and I'm skipping their, you know, services sometimes. And so okay. I'm in a state of depression, and
Aaron and the kids are still going, of course.
Oh yeah. They're even more loyal. They're probably staying over there at Ashland with Gwen all the time. And so I'm looking more and more unstable. And this is kind of the period, you know, Gene is talking about, I look unstable and I'm about to snap, you know, from the pressure and the hair. Like I mentioned, my hair was blue, green, and I actually had it colored by this wild, rebellious, you know, she was still at the time in Remnant Fellowship woman who worked at a salon in East Nashville. And she ended up happening to be one of the women I'd have an affair with. And she was actually the one who talked about me on the HBO Max doc.
Okay.
She was got me into the hair coloring. But you know, also, and I'm going to say the hair thing, that was just yet another completely rebellious attempt to thwart their constant control over everyone's looks, right? You have to understand, people go, why, you know, you're turning your hair blue. Okay. It was a attempt to thwart that. They have control over everybody's looks down to everything, what you're wearing. So, you know, I'm at the end of my rope, and Will, he was super connected. He had done music stuff for people for years in Nashville, which is the music city, you know, in L.A. and New York City. He set up large special event concerts for, like, Faith Hill and Tim McGraw. And he couldn't even get 1 ounce of respect or listen from Gwen Shamblin, who's, like, the cult leader extraordinaire. This guy couldn't do it. And we never mentioned it, but I think she found out because I think David Shamblin was telling her. But so anyway, we're talking, and I'm locked into Remnant, and I've made too many mistakes in the past now. And so I'm asking him, we're sitting at this like bar somewhere, and I remember this very distinctly. I'm like, what are the chances of getting out of the church? Well, I'm like, I'm asking him. He's a very smart guy, and I didn't want to hear the answer. But he's, you know, smoking a cigar, and he's like, I don't see any form of a way out. And he leaned back, and I'll never forget, you know, we talk about so many attempts, so many failures. So he tells me something that ends up just changing my life. And he just said, and I, this is profanity, but I won't use the profanity part, but he said, the next time you get a hold of one of these pieces of, you know what, you make sure that you bring a recorder with you. And he said, since there's nothing you can do, just start taking notes of what you're seeing in a journal and tell no one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I started doing.
In 2009, 2010.
That's what he said, 2009. Yeah. And so.
And you've kept that journal up pretty well since then.
That leads into some other things.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened, and if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night, or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website. website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.